In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Defying the laws of the universe. Traveling across the globe. Giving up life and liberty. Finding the real people. Finding the truth. This team will stop at nothing to tell your story. Decades in the making. Finding the people behind the ads. Ad Phantom has arrived.
A little over the top?
Yeah, just a little.
Whatever, just roll with it.
All right, here we go.
Hi everyone, I'm Ryan.
And I'm John.
And welcome to the Ad Phantom Talk Show, where we take the opportunity to interview a special guest and tell their real story. On today's program, we have Paula Garan, who is senior editor at Prime Books, and she has worked with a number of A-name authors and B-name authors. She's got a great career, has a lot of great things to say, and, John, she's a bit of a Halloween freak, but a good freak, not one of those like creepy freaks that you know you want to make sure you know where they are at all times, but a really entertaining one. We had a great interview with her, and I think that all of you will thoroughly enjoy that, especially in this Halloween season.
Ah, for sure. No, it was a lot of fun, and I checked out her book, The Zombies, The Recently Undead. It's a lot of fun. It's a bunch of short stories from a bunch of really high-profile authors. It's definitely worth a look-see.
Yeah, she had a lot of great advice and recommendations for books, and she talks about all those in our interview as well. Sure. Along the lines of Halloween, John, there was a news article that I thought would make a really great costume for you. So this is in California. You know where else, right? Only happens in California. This guy, his friends bet him $100 that he could fit in one of those baby swing set things.
Oh, good. Yeah, I like this.
so he says, well, how am I going to get in there? You know, he's probably already wearing skinny jeans, so it's probably not that much of a problem. But they get laundry detergent, lube up his legs so that he can fit in there. Once he gets in, which he basically gets to do it, he gets stuck. And his friends are like, I'm out of here. So, I mean, what kind of friends are like that? I mean, John, if I ever get the desire, right, or if I ever get to the point where I'm going to be
stuck in a swing set, I'm leaving you.
I will
leave you there.
Our friendship is over. Oh, man.
But I will put the video on YouTube, and then I'll leave you there overnight. I'll come back in the morning and videotape you, and then put that on YouTube. Hey, how was your sleep last night?
As long as we can make a profit, I don't care.
Right.
Anything to go viral.
There you go.
But what are you doing for Halloween, John? You've been preparing for a party that I'm not invited to, I think.
You're totally invited. You just live across the country.
Yeah,
I sent you an invite on the Facebooks.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So what are you doing?
Nothing too big. You know, just snacks and movies. And there's
Did you decorate your house?
I did.
Use the cheesy ghetto spiderweb things on your
We did. Why is that so hard to get on and off of, like, shrubbery? Is that what it's called? The plants that you have to have outside of your house when you own a house, apparently? Yes.
Well, first of all, because they're giant things of cotton, right, which don't look anything like spider webs. It looks like, you know, Q-tips gone wild out on the front lawn. I don't quite understand.
That's what I'm gonna do next year. That's my theme, Q-tips gone wild. That's what I decided. You think? No, I did build a fire pit in my backyard, so we're gonna
burn
have
witches.
A place. Yeah, to make it nice and extra creepy. You know, it's a nice sprawly party, I think I'm excited about it. I like Halloween. It's my favorite holiday.
Mine as well. You know, we still, ladies and gentlemen, we still have the contest going on. We're not getting as much of a response as we'd like to. Make sure to go to Facebook, tell your friends to join the Facebook fan page, and you can win a free webcam. In fact, there's a great commercial that'll come up right after this where you can learn more about our Halloween contest. In the meantime, we hope all of you have a happy Halloween, that it's safe, and that you get a little bit of scares, and please don't poison your neighborhood children. It's not good. Plus, you get on this list, you know, that everybody's watching.
Apples.
Yeah, that's such a bad idea.
and wearing black clothes and ears and mascara. Black,
does not.
It's not.
Makes you. Yeah, it's that's not Halloween.
Sexy, a sexy kitty is not a costume.
Yeah, exactly. Just go home. Neither is. We talked about this before. Neither is the store-bought Walmart stuff. I hate it when people go buy the costume. If you're doing that, good. You know, you saved a few bucks. You helped support the Chinese government. And you should know that you are lame.
Well,
you
I don't
are
know.
Just lame.
Sometimes in order to get, you got to buy things if you're like want to be like a stormtrooper or my kid was R2-D2 last
no,
year.
No, 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 no. If you are making an R2-D2, you have style. If you are buying it, you're like, eh, good job. But anyway, so before we enough. Get too far on a tangent, we're going to talk about Halloween coming up next with Paula Garan. But before we get to our interview, John's got a great Halloween bacon recipe for us.
That's right, dude. I found a recipe submitted for meatloaf cupcakes. They look like the standard cupcakes you would get that are
meatloaf
made of cake.
Cupcakes?
Yes.
That's great.
It's pretty simple. You take your favorite meatloaf, and instead of a cupcake, you wrap a piece of bacon around it, and then you put the meat inside, and you cook it, and then put mashed potatoes on top. And instead of sprinkles, that's right, everyone, chopped up bacon.
And what are these called? Are these like Dr. Frankenstein's meatloaf surprise? I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, we can call Dr. Frankenfurter, maybe? I don't know.
All right. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after this quick break with our interview with Paula Garan.
I miss you already.
It is fortuitous that you will be here for this Halloween season.
The Advent.
John, what the hell are we doing?
I don't know. I'm trying to get everyone in the Halloween spirit.
We should hold a contest.
Ooh, I like contests.
A Halloween Ad Phantom fan contest. What do you think?
I like that. So, kind of a trick-or-treat situation we got here, folks. If you could trick your friends, well, if you can get 25 of your friends to like the Ad Phantom web page, we'll treat you with one of the prizes that we've got from one of our great sponsors.
Yeah, first prize is a Logitech HD webcam from our partner Logitech. Second prize being $20 in iTunes gift cards. And we're even rewarding third, fourth, and fifth place because, you know, we're all about rewarding the losers. I mean, the semi-winners. With $10 iTunes cards. Hey, that's a pretty good reward for not doing a whole lot.
That's right. It's enough to get you a couple apps and maybe a really bad Halloween album.
Again, these prizes are provided by our partners Apple and Logitech. In order to qualify, all you have to do is go to your Facebook while you're logged in. Do a search for Ad Phantom at the top. You'll find our fan page, and right at the top, there's a little like button on that page. Hit the like button, and you become a fan. Invite more people, and then you become eligible for the prizes.
That's all you gotta do.
Pretty simple. AdPhantom.com. Ad Phantom. Finding the people behind the ads.
I liked it.
Welcome back, everyone, and joining us this segment is our award-winning guest. Hailing from Akron, Ohio, Paula Garan is senior editor for Prime Books. Paula is the editor of the annual year's best dark fantasy and horror series of anthologies and editor of numerous other anthologies, including Best New Paranormal Romance, Zombies, The Recent Dead, Vampires, The Recent Undead, Halloween, and many others. In an earlier life, she produced the pioneering weekly email newsletter Dark Echo, winning 2 Bram Stoker Awards, an International Horror Guild Award, and a World Fantasy Award nomination. And edited Horror Garage Magazine, earning more awards, IHG Award, and the second World Fantasy nomination. Paula has contributed reviews, interviews, and articles in numerous professional publications and edited, produced for Omni Online and Universal Studios Horror Online. She reviewed regularly for Publishers Weekly for over a decade, was review editor for Fantasy, a columnist for Cemetery Dance, and a contributing editor for the CFQ Cinema Fantastique. Paula has also done a great deal of other various and sundry work in speculative fiction, including agenting, publicity, teaching, and publishing. As you can see, ladies and gentlemen, Paula has quite the resume, and we're really grateful to have her on our show today. Thanks for joining us, Paula.
Thanks for having me.
With all this experience, I feel safe in calling you one of our premier Halloween experts. So I'm curious, when and how did this love of Halloween start?
I'm not sure I'm really an expert, but I'm one of those people that when I get interested in something, I tend to want to find out more about it. And of course, I started loving Halloween when I was a kid, and I had was very lucky to have a mother who could sew really well. And so she could make really cool anything I wanted to be at Halloween, I got to be. And
so none of those Walmart costumes.
No,
right?
No, none of that stuff. You know,
I have a pet peeve about that. I hate it when people buy that cheap Walmart stuff. Make your costume where it's not worth it.
Oh, yeah. You know, so and plus, not to mention how old I am, which is really very young. But I was lucky enough to grow up in the day when trick or treating was not considered either evil or bizarre or unsafe. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I was actually raised in a Southern Baptist church, which nowadays condemns Halloween, I understand. Yeah. In my day, we had Halloween parties. There was none of the, you know, connotation that there was anything other than fun about it. So, you know, that's where I got my love of Halloween. And then, you know, as I got older, and then this whole career that I have now kind of started out because I wasn't really all that well aware of horror per se until about 15 years ago or so, and kind of fell into it. And that's where the whole idea of researching it and finding a little bit more about it came about.
Huh. Very cool. So what is it about Halloween that excites you the most or that you really love?
I think it's because you can be weird and be acceptable at the same time.
That's what we have at Online Show.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that like sociologists call it a festival of inversion, or you know, being terribly academic. It's a time when you can not be yourself and
right.
Those inverted or things.
Or in other words, be more of yourself that you just kind of keep away from polite society, as they say.
Yeah, and I think it's the whole thing of being the other, which is a central part of everybody, is a feeling of otherness. And this is a time where you can celebrate that instead of sometimes trying not to be too otherish. The bizarre, the crazy, the cool, anything that you want to be, you can be. I mean, at its core, there is that primal fear, dying, and Halloween's kind of about controlling that in one way or another.
Right. That's interesting.
Whether you're mocking it, or whether there's the religious meanings to it, or all sorts of occult traditions. I mean, again, it's a way to control something that is otherwise incontrollable and we all face eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you talked about this a little bit in your introduction to the book Halloween, which I read and found quite interesting, and I recommend that all of our listeners check it out. Again, that's Halloween. Visit adphantom.com and you'll be able to find links to it there. I did want to talk about a couple of things that you wrote about in your introduction to Halloween. And I mean, we got pages of information there, but could you briefly summarize the history of Halloween that you think people should know that they don't necessarily recognize nowadays?
Well, I think, first of all, just the recognition that obviously some type of festival involving the supernatural and death goes back in almost every culture all the way back to as far as we can go back and figure out if there were festivals. I think that's the first thing. A lot of people tend to identify it with a Celtic festival, which you can pronounce a couple of different ways. Samhain. It's spelled Samhain, but right, that's not right. How you pronounce it. I think a lot of our modern Halloween is influenced by that. At the same time, it's not as influenced and it's not as much of a part of that tradition as I think some people tend to think it is. Right. We have a whole new set of modern mythology that's kind of grown up around that really was kind of those Victorians, you know, they threw the stuff in there about Christmas and same thing with Halloween.
I find it interesting that a lot of what we celebrate has religious background in the Protestants versus the Catholics during the Puritan era and when they were coming over to the United States, which is why it is such a predominant holiday here in the United States as opposed to many other countries other than England. Could you talk to us a little bit about that journey from Halloween from Europe over to the United States?
Well, sure. Especially it is interesting because we were talking about inversions and the abnormal being normal. The more you fight Halloween, the stronger it becomes. comes. So obviously everyone is pretty much aware of the Protestant Reformation. And right. So when that came along, one thing that Martin Luther didn't care for much was saints. And so when you didn't have saints, you couldn't have saint days. So you couldn't have a Hallows Eve, which was actually a day to celebrate all of the saints, the all being hallowed. So, however, the English kind of kept some holidays going with Guy Fawkes, and they kind of mixed that up with the gunpowder plot and all of that.
Remember the 5th of November.
Yep,
I always have a Guy Fawkes. We don't burn effigies or give away pennies.
Do you do
pennies,
a bonfire, though?
No, we get together and we watch V for Vendetta and eat, like, you know, little snacky snacks. It's a big fun.
Well, the only Guy Fawkes Day celebration I've ever been to actually was at Neil Gaiman's house.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so
jealous.
I can drop a name there. But
there you go.
Being British, he remembered growing up with the bonfires and stuff and had one year at his place. So that was a lot of fun. But back to what we were
talking. Back to Halloween.
Of course, the people who came over from England, the Puritans, didn't have much room for Halloween. They really didn't want to celebrate that. So American tradition really started out, at least when they came over, there wasn't any Halloween. There was a little bit of Guy Fawkes days, not when the Revolution came, of course. But the real American traditions, the real start of Halloween in America came a little bit later with the Germans, the Catholics. Then, of course, you had African beliefs that came into it. And so it was really, again, kind of that immigrant hodgepodge mix that makes this country great that also kind of started Halloween. That's where we get a lot of our traditions and the start of it, at least in this country.
And a great celebration of the harvest as well.
Oh, sure. Which is, again, another parallel going back. I think we do get a lot of Irish traditions. We were talking about the Celts, but same thing with a lot of Irish traditions were brought into Halloween.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. In your writing, you suggest that today we need Halloween more than ever. Why do you believe that is?
I think we all need fantasy to survive. In some form or another, as long as you have a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of being able to get outside of yourself, I think that's the essential thing of why we need it. It's a connection to your past. I think we were talking about at one point, you know, how I was when I was a kid. I think you can't help but on Halloween think back to your own family, your own, what were you in fourth grade? Were you a werewolf? you know, there's a continuation there. There's a history there, personal and then much broader, that's a connection.
You reference in your writing how there are different levels of Halloween based on your age. And I think that ties in perfectly. You know, right now you think about what your costume was and how you were trick-or-treating when you were young. When you're a teenager, there's a little bit more mischief that's thrown in there, maybe some toilet papering houses, egging houses, those kind of things. And then as an adult, not only are you reminiscing from what you did when you were younger, but the parties, you know, change. You go towards
one
the
hope.
Parties. You, yeah,
right.
Yeah. One, well, you know.
I don't know
about
you guys personally, but I hope it's changed for you.
Well,
you, but then
that
you
commercial.
Get to reminisce once you have kids. You know, I'm experiencing it myself.
You
it's like
have to edit that out. Yeah,
exactly. I have a 2-year-old, and it's like, well, is it too young to put latex appliques on her face? Is that is that considered child abuse? Can I make my daughter a terrifying zombie? Is that okay socially? You know, it's those kind of questions that you got to think about.
You just kind of relive it, and that's I think what I love and what everybody loves about Halloween is that it's every year it's a time to remember what's happened in the past, and it's a different stage.
I think that's a good point. It's like I said, you know, you think about it in a childlike way, but as you become older, it becomes a very and it's an individual thing too. I think that you mentioned the whole thing of the harvest festival. I think to a lot of people, even today, it's still that time of the year when it's changing, when there's, you know, the harvest and the leaves falling. It's to some people, it has a lot to do with that. To others, it's all about party.
You touched on this briefly at the very beginning. You were brought up Southern Baptist, and we've just been talking about the positives of Halloween, but there are many religious groups that see it as a negative, devil worshiping type holiday. Why do you think that is?
That's very, very recent. I mean, it is very recent, like I said, within my lifetime, which isn't all that long. It's very similar to where you get a lot of the current beliefs about Armageddon or the last days and the interpretation of revelations. That all came about historically only very recently in the 19th century. This whole Satan thing with Halloween really did not come around until around the 70s. And again, it was a fundamentalist reaction. There is a partially a societal reaction, kind of the urban legend thing, where things were getting a little bit more scary in society. You started getting the urban legends about pins and the candy bars and razor blades and the apples. That kind of gave Halloween a negative connotation. But as far as this anti-Halloween thing, the feeling that it has something to do with evil and Satan, that's all a very modern fundamentalist conservative myth that, as far as I can tell, they made up for their own uses.
That's interesting. You know, I was actually in elementary school in Pennsylvania, just outside of Philly. And you can imagine how strong Halloween is up there. I mean, in the Northeast, it's a huge holiday. And then after that, I moved down to North Carolina and I was shocked and disappointed to find that, you know, there was no celebration, very little mention of it. Many of the teachers weren't even allowed to put Halloween decorations in their classrooms. And I went to a public school.
Exactly. And this happened, I believe it or not, was once a PTA president.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, well, congratulations.
No, I was not Mama's PTA president. But that's a whole other legend. But at that point, which was quite a while back, a couple of mommies brought it up of, you know, making this a fall festival, not Halloween. And it was soundly, forget this. No, we're having Halloween. However, now that very same school, these years later, no longer has Halloween. They have a fall festival, and you're not allowed to dress up in anything except historical outfits. You can't dress up like a supernatural person or thing or whatever. So there has been this really negative influence. And like you said, in the South, Halloween has a very strong tradition. And for you to then move to North Carolina, whereas if you had been there 20 years before, hey, it would have made Philly look like nothing.
That's interesting.
It's true. Because this is where Ryan and I actually met when he moved down to North Carolina. I'm still currently
That's
there.
That's lovely. I hope you two are happy.
Well, not implying that we have a relationship.
I was just wondering which one of you was the mother of the two-year-old. That's all.
No. I'm in Arizona. He's married. I'm engaged. So,
uh-huh. Yeah. So okay. It's, really. Nothing wrong with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had our bromance over the Boy Scouts. You know that kind of typical, you know, coming
lies,
of age story.
Lies.
So anyway, we got together and. Growing up here, I've noticed that, you know, my parents are very conservative, very, very Christian background, but they grew up in the Midwest in Missouri, and it was a big thing out there to them, and there wasn't that fear. She was like, you know, so, you know, if you get an apple, throw it away. Anything that's wrapped in chocolate, you know, and even when I was a kid, you know, just 20 years or so ago, there was still that kind of fear mongering, but I've noticed that now, like, you know, my church particularly, we have a trunk or treat that we do every year where we just get together. And so that way, you know, we just rent a parking lot, or we do it in the church meeting house, and everyone just backs their cars up and decorates their trunks. And that way every kid can have a safe, you know, exciting Halloween, and you can still celebrate it. But even that,
I don't think the threat is nearly as big as people implied that it is.
I think, too, I actually grew up in Oklahoma, so I am talking from a Southern tradition.
For sure.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like it's sad that, again, that fundamentalist religion type of thing has so influenced a lot of social. At the same time, it's just like you said, a trunk of ween or whatever. I mean, that's creative. It's just a different way to organize it. Or people organize their neighborhoods, or they organize their own parties for kids. There is right now in England quite a bit of controversy about Halloween, that it kind of got imported and was getting pretty big in England, except trick-or-treat kind of turned into something a little bit wilder over there, and people started really resenting Beggar's Night. And there are now, you get little pre-printed signs now in newspapers and shops and things in London saying no trick-or-treating here. Very polite, but, you know, there has been kind of a backlash there that's entirely not religious. It's simply that it got kind of out of hand in some people's minds.
Those English ruin everything.
Exactly. Well, I thought it was a simple system. If the lights are on in the house, you can go and knock on the door. If the lights are off,
off at the house, you don't go there. Isn't that the system?
that seems to work. Evidently, in London, they did. There also was an interesting, I read an article that was, I think, in last year in a newspaper. It was kind of this interesting, again, very British sort of, is it really right to teach children to beg? Which I really never saw Trick or Treat as that. I mean,
if anything, a penny for Guy Fawkes is way more like begging than for candy.
So that's the connection to them, is they see it as something that's more like, you know, like begging.
Yeah,
so,
peddling for food.
Yeah.
Interesting. Want to change gears a little bit, I do have to ask, what is your favorite Halloween creature or supernatural creature?
Oh, that's really tough.
You need a minute. Go ahead and take one.
I love them all. What can I say? I'm not really afraid of the supernatural. I'm not really afraid of things like vampires and zombies and other monsters. And I think that's one reason I'm kind of, you know, interested in the whole genre, is that I don't scare in some ways that maybe societally we scare. The things that really scare me are really scary things, and that's usually human beings.
Yeah.
And there's nothing really scarier than just a really very natural human being. That to me is a lot scarier of what we can do to ourselves than anything supernatural.
Like The Shining, as the Nicholas character at The Shining, where it's like he just started off as a normal writer, and next thing you know, he's murdering his family. You know, it's like
there's no such thing as a normal writer. But
there's your first problem.
But you had to get that one in.
Yeah.
That's a debatable question. Is there anything supernatural in The Shining or not? A lot of very good scary stories have that aspect. Is he crazy? Is it just him? Or is there something out there working on him?
That's what makes the greatest stories. Well, we have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with more from Paula Grand.
All right, guys, welcome to the product review section of our show. Now, we got a couple great new products. Ryan, what do we have?
First one is the Real Writing Jobs. Again, you can find this one at editphantom.com. It is an employment opportunity. It has a value that's pretty generalized. If you're going to work from home or would like to do some experimental writing for a few projects, you can sign up with these guys. It is a $34 monthly cost.
You said experimental writing?
Yes, experimental writing. I don't know. If you feel like writing and not having...
I wanted to explore that further. That was exciting to me.
Experimental writing, I don't know. It's where you can feel free to write what you want and not be judged for it. Actually, you will be judged for it, but hey, maybe it might get in there.
We will
judge
these
guys.
That's our job.
these guys, lots of times different companies need to hire writers to just do some stuff for their website. In fact, at Fandom, we have hired writers as well to help us with our workload. So basically what happens is you will write certain articles based on topics that they give you. They'll review it, and if they like it, then they publish it. This costs $34 to do it. Right now, that's at a 50% coupon. If you don't get it at $34, don't do it, because $34 is a pretty average price to be part of an organization like this. Anything more than that is, in my opinion, too expensive. Customer service is excellent. You can contact them through a number of different ways. Presentation on the site was good, except, like, honestly, I thought this was pretty hilarious that they were asking for writers, but that the website was full of different typos and incorrect grammar. I took that as a couple of different signals. Like, one, either they're very desperate to hire writers. They're like, we can't even get our own website right, so please, please come work for us so you can write for us. Or I don't know, but I did find that to be really funny. Overall, it got 4.2 stars, which is a very good rating. It did lose some just mainly because it was kind of average. But hey, it's a great opportunity if you're looking to work from home. And if you love writing, you know, take the chance, see if it's great. If it doesn't work out, then you can get your money back, so it's worth checking out. Again, visit adphantom.com and you can do a search for Real Writing Jobs and you will find information there.
Right on.
Our next product, John. The title just, I fun with gluten-free, low-glycemic food cookbook.
Wait, what? Wait, hold on. Gluten-free isn't fun. If it were fun, everyone would be doing it, and it'd be easy.
No, it's not fun at all. But this lady, and when I got to tell you, when we first got this site to look at, my first thought is, you got to be kidding me. So I watched the video, and surprisingly, the video was engaging. I enjoyed watching what this lady was doing. What it is, she is really into cooking healthy, and she's trying to make foods that diabetics can, you know, use, and people with special allergies
like
and that
kind
of thing.
Celiacs and stuff. That makes sense.
Right. So there is a market for it, and the thing is she's definitely a real person sharing their real talents and desires. The website, I got to tell you, initially it was going to get one star in presentation. When we went through it and realizing the fact that this lady was just honestly telling you and showing you her product, we gave it 5 stars because she was simple, direct, and she was honest behind it. And at Ad Phantom, what we're really looking for is maybe your product isn't for everybody, but if you're honest about it and you're passionate about trying to share what you believe, you know, is something that will help another individual, we're all behind it. We're in full support of it because we think that, you know, there's lots of different people out there, different opinions, and there's always a market for something. So kudos to her and sharing her recipe. It's not something that I'd be interested in because if it doesn't have gluten in it, I'm not interested. But it might be helpful with somebody else. So it got an overall 4.5 stars, which is still an excellent rating. Lost a little bit on value because, well, John, a little on the pricey side. It's $27, claims to have some extra stuff. $27 for an ebook cookbook.
Yeah, that's
a bit high. Our last week we had another cookbook, which was The Companion of Chutneys, which is awesome, by the way. You should definitely check that out. It's excellent. I'll have some more details later.
I expect some jam in the mail, sir.
Yes, it is an excellent buy-in for only $10. We usually only review 2 products, but I have to get behind The Compendium. Check that out, adphantom.com. With all our product reviews, again, we try and get some daily ones out there. We're working on a couple of submissions and getting stuff out there and more regular for you. Visit adphantom.com, subscribe to our site. Anyway, you could find these reviews along with Compendium and a number of other reviews at adphantom.com. Usually there's a new product review out every day or every other day, along with special deals from our premier partners. Newegg and Logitech for sure are always giving out daily deals. Check it out at adphantom.com. Subscribe to our posts and like us on Facebook. We'll be right back here in just a moment with more from our interview.
Word. All right, welcome back, everyone. And we're still talking about Halloween. We just discussed your favorite Halloween creature. You've got a lot of great editing experience, so I want to switch gears a little bit and start talking about books. How often do you work directly with others in these pieces that you edit?
I'm a pretty hands-on editor. A lot of people today don't edit quite as closely as I do, but because I've worked with a lot of beginning writers, and because I'm kind of anal, maybe,
Well, you gotta be an editor, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I do, you know, work pretty much hands-on and working with authors. Being an editor just means that you're doing the most and the best that you can to help the author make the best book or story that they can produce.
So everyone should know names like Ray Bradbury from Fahrenheit 451. If they don't, shame on them. Have you worked directly with Mr. Bradbury?
No, I have had the chance to meet him, and he's delightful, but I haven't got to work with him directly. The Halloween anthology is a reprint anthology.
Right, right.
So everything in it's been, you know, published before. I do know a lot of the authors in it, but I haven't actually got to work with Mr. Bradbury now. And you notice I automatically say Mr. Bradbury, and I don't think I would say that of anybody else in this business.
I just said, you know, I was the same way. It was Mr. Ray Bradbury because that's a name that just kind of...
Like, you know, he's kind of patient zero of the virus for a lot of people. And yeah, it's once in a while when you hear some of his peers, Bill Nolan, William F. Nolan, who is a peer of Ray's, will talk about how Ray does this or that, perhaps not as well as he could. And it's kind of shocking.
Right. Now, I've been reading a lot of more of the contemporary fiction kind of stories lately, Jim Butcher and you know, do you find a lot of crossover between the people that like the fantasy novels and maybe the the horror novels or the paranormal side of things.
We could do a whole nother show on urban fantasy.
Fair enough.
I have another essay in another anthology that came out recently explaining about that. The whole stuff that you're reading right now, like right. Jim Butcher, is the tradition. There are a lot of these folks started out writing fantasy and continued writing fantasy.
Right.
A lot of the writers started out as horror writers and switched over to this type of, again, very dark fiction. It's often very horrific. There's a lot of mystery writers that are very good at writing that type of fiction, because if you'll notice, that type of novel tends to have a mystery plot going on.
Yeah,
here.
And it's very Poirot-esque, you know.
Yeah, and so it's that entire genre of whatever you want to call it is very, and then of course you've got the romance part of it, the paranormal romance, right. Where people from the romance. So you have all sorts of different type of people and all sorts of different types of genres mixing and blending in.
And they all have kind of that same kind of fan base. I mean, I think
it's interesting that the fans have kind of gone back and forth. One nice thing about the recent urban fantasy is that it did bring a lot of romance readers, what we call across the aisle, fantasy. You don't often find science fiction and fantasy people crossing the aisle to romance.
It's true.
However, there are some wonderful romance readers who tried the more urban fantasy rather than paranormal romance and discovered, wow, this is maybe a more wholly developed world, because the focus on fantasy is on the story, not on a romance. So you have a more developed world, you have a different type of plot. And I think a lot of these folks have said, hey, fantasy is great, and there's not a better bunch of book buyers in the world than romance fans. So welcome, welcome. We're very glad that you like fantasy too.
I'm sure. Charlene Harris and people like that have done a lot for that genre. Not
and Charlene started as a mystery writer.
Yeah, my sister introduced me to those books, and they were okay. But again, it was, you know, the TV show's good. I'm lazy, you know.
It's nice with Charlene. Is one of the. It's nice to see her rich and famous, because she's a great person, and never really expected it, and it's nice to see the good guys win.
Yes, I'm a big fan of the underdog. So what are some of your favorite pieces that you have worked on?
Right now I'm doing a lot of these reprint anthologies, and I've been having a lot of fun with them, because I'm getting to go back and rediscover a lot of stories that, sure, you might have run across it, or maybe you didn't, but I'm getting to select a theme, sometimes a fairly narrow theme, and put together one book that kind of gives you a different picture than you might have because of the selection of the short stories in it. So that's what I've been doing recently that's really been a lot of fun. I've also been working with some really great novelists. One of them is R.A. McAvoy, to whom a lot of people is a new name, yet 20-something years ago, she was a living legend. And due to a health condition, she couldn't write for over 20 years. And we're coming out next month with her first book in 23 years, I think it is.
Awesome.
And so working with someone like that, wow, that's great. She's huge to me. She means a lot to a lot of people. Yet she's also totally new. There's not an author I work with that I haven't liked working with at all. They all offer me something new, and I hope I offer them something helpful. And each book has its own reasons to be enjoyable or educational or frustrating to work on. There's always that part of it, too.
Going through all this research and having to go through all these different pieces, I'm sure you run into a ton of misinformation specifically about Halloween. So what books would you recommend that people look into for good Halloween information?
Well, you were mentioning earlier about being Halloween expert. I really think Lisa Morton is my favorite Halloween expert. And she has a book called The Halloween Encyclopedia that has a new edition that came out, I think, just this year. And she's definitely very, very credible in the field. And then there's another person too, Leslie Pratt, and I'm not sure how you pronounce her last name, but I think it's Bonnetyne, Bannetyne, who has done a Halloween, an American Holiday, and Halloween Nation is a new version kind of that. But if you're looking for real information, solid information, those are the two sources that I recommend. Otherwise, you run into a lot of
religious fanatical information that we talked about earlier.
And a lot of it's inadvertent. A lot of it's just things passed on that, you know. Then, of course, there's the internet, which, of course, is always accurate, true.
Absolutely, yes. Wikipedia sources and whatnot.
Well, if it's in type, then it's for real, right?
Yeah, it's there on my screen. It's got to be true, right?
Exactly.
Yep, exactly.
Do you have any fun Halloween facts for us?
Oh, gosh.
Maybe ones that the mainstream doesn't necessarily know about.
Well, you know, I think one thing that most people don't know is that Halloween, particularly around the turn of the century, the late 19th and early 20th century, was really more of a kind of matchmaking holiday. It was considered a time to get together for the young people, to get together, and there was a lot of fortune telling. There was a lot of who will you marry games. It was a chance for, you know, the boys and girls to get together and have, you know, a little fun. And I'm sure they managed to have more fun than the people who were chaperoning them. But there was a real strong connection. Like I said, that was what a lot of what we celebrate now with Halloween kind of was made up almost from in ladies' magazines, because they were reading these things from British magazines, and when Halloween was starting to be celebrated more in late Victorian times, very late, the American writers kind of assumed, oh, this must be a very British upper crust thing, and Americans were all Anglophiles back then.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of these things, the parties, you know, and some of the games and things were all started in these women's magazines as, you know, have a Halloween party. It's kind of the in thing to do. You know, in 1911 or 1910. And there's one story in the anthology that's from the 1920s that kind of gives you a glimpse of that.
I fully support that. In fact, as far as my standards go, if she doesn't celebrate Halloween, then she's not a keeper.
There you go.
It's true.
So here's a fact is that I really didn't realize until I started thinking about it when I was writing that was that, you know, jack-o'-lanterns, you always think the headless horseman in Sleepy Hollow. How many times have you seen that depicted with his head being a glowing jack-o'-lantern, right?
Yeah.
Read the story. It doesn't say anything about that. It's just a pumpkin.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
How many times have you seen that depicted in a million different movies or illustrations of it?
Yeah, it's always got an evil smile and everything. Now that you mentioned that, I do remember discussing that in my studies, actually, that he did not have a face on the
Have a face on the pumpkin.
And I think that, again, coming from the Germans, they like to put candles on things. You know, that's you know, that's where we get Christmas lights and all that kind of thing. It's a very German tradition.
Evidently Queen Victoria approved of Halloween, and same thing with Christmas. You know, that went a long way in those days.
Right. Yeah, and I used to work for a company. It was in a call center, and the CEO loved Halloween. We didn't do a lot of Halloween production, but he let us dress the call center up just lavishly, and he would love to come around and see what everyone did. You know, it always surprises you how some people surprise you with their kind of love of Halloween and past.
And that's where the matchmaking comes in, as you go,
right?
You go to the different booths and whoever, or cubicles, and whoever's got the best decoration, you ask out on a date.
There you go.
Paula,
the best decoration? Just wondering exactly what you meant by decoration. You know, the girl with the best decoration.
The most high-spirited. I'll say that much.
But I mean, it does make sense. Being at autumn, you know, you've just finished the harvest. You've just worked a lot of long, hard hours, and it's getting darker sooner, and it's getting colder. You know, you like to snuggle up next to someone warm, right? It's just
who's in fishnets and spiders and the whole thing.
I do have to say that's one trend that I abhor is that new kind of almost costume that a lot of women are donning these days.
Well, I think that's still true. The sexy look, especially for women. I just did one of the little blog things that I've been doing on the 31 days of Halloween. I just found out what supposedly the big costume for this year is supposed to be Charlie Sheen. Which just doesn't cut it for me. I don't know about you.
I don't quite get that. I mean, what do you do? Just mess up your hair and talk
about
winning?
Yeah, and wear shades. Yeah, or you can get a mask, you know. another one, and this is from a possibly not reliable source since they happen to make these costumes, was the Angry Birds is supposedly very big for kids this year.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
One of my favorite bands of all time is the Misfits, and so, you know, I mean, I want to say 80-90% of their songs are just about horror movies and the whole horror genre. And so, you know, growing up listening to that, it makes it pretty exciting getting into this kind of year because, you're like, well, I should be an adult and I've got a normal, respectable job. But you know what? This day right here, I can listen to whatever terrible music I want to listen to.
Well, I mean, the thing about Halloween is it creeps into everything. There's all sorts of different stories from the really scary to the fun to the, you know, to the music. So, Paula, tell us, what is your favorite scary story or Halloween story?
It's not specifically Halloween story, but scary story. One of my all-time favorites, and I think for anybody's to go back to Poe. And if you don't think that Edgar Allan Poe is relevant today, get your kids
absolutely.
And read them The Telltale Heart, somewhat dramatically.
Yes, I'd agree.
And you will scare their little socks off, and they'll love it. They will absolutely love it. There's a lot of great classic stories like that that I think that's one place to go first. If you're looking for a good story that still resonates no matter what your age, is to go back to the Poe, Blackwood, Algernon Blackwood, Ambrose Bierce, M.R. James, those guys you can't beat in the short form. You know, it just still works. Sorry.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Absolutely.
I think in a longer work, again, staying with the traditional stuff, is Henry James, The Turn of the Screw, which is still a very scary story and a very revealing true story about children, because I think it shows you that no matter what, we never really can understand children. You can never really know children. And I think it has a lot of levels in that story that can get scarier and scarier the older you get and the more you know about children. So that's kind of a classic that, again, you can read it one way or as you get older and as a parent or as a parent of adults, you can read it different ways.
All right, Paula, do you have any great recommendations for us as far as books that we should sink our teeth into this holiday season?
Well, we've talked about some of the classics, and then there are some modern classics. Ray Bradbury, to reference again, Something Wicked This Way Comes, The Halloween Tree, October Country, definitely all great seasonal reading. My favorite Shirley Jackson book called We've Always Lived in the Castle, and that's very appropriate for anybody age 12 and up. If you're looking for something for a little bit younger but still good for everybody, is The Witches by Roald Dahl. And I think those that you can even read that aloud to younger kids, and it's a good one. I'm not going to get into any modern authors because I know I will forget too many people too much, but there are four books that I wanted to particularly mention by living authors. One of them really is anything by Peter Straub. You can't miss with Peter. He scares you no matter what. One of my favorite books is Beyond Black by Hilary Mantel, which is maybe kind of an odd pick, but if you read it, you'll see how scary it is. And then two by some younger authors, The Night Country by Stuart Onan. And there's a story from Stuart in the Halloween anthology, but The Night Country actually takes place on Halloween, and it's a fabulous novel, beautifully written. And another one that I think is going to become a classic that came out, I think it was 2006, is by Norman Partridge, and it's called Dark Harvest, and it's a novella, but it also is a coming-of-age story and tells you a lot about being an American growing up and Halloween. So you might try some of those for your Halloween reading.
All right, those are some great recommendations, Paula. What are some current works that you're working on right now that you'd like to recommend for us?
We have a book coming out from Prime in January by John Shirley, who is a fabulous horror and science fiction author. And the novel's called Everything is Broken. It's about a tsunami hitting the West Coast. It gets scarier from there. So do look
for
that.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah, Everything is Broken. We have a book coming out next week that's a reprint called The Bone Key, The Necromantic Mysteries of Kyle Murchison Booth by Sarah Manette.
And this next week, what was the date on that one?
That will be October 18th, I believe.
Okay.
Just in time for the Halloween?
Right, just in time. And if you like kind of throwback, old-style stuff, you might like hers. And then just, we like scary stuff at Prime Books. And we've mentioned some of the stuff I've done. There's also a couple of anthologies by Ekaterina Sadia Beware of the Night and Running with the Pack, which are both about shapeshifters. And then we have another release that came out the same month as Halloween, which is Creatures, 30 Years of Monster Stories, with John Langan and Paul Tremblay editing that. There's a couple of books, a couple of collections we've done with Prime. The Ones That Got Away by Stephen Graham Jones. Write that one down, John. Stephen Graham Jones is a very, very interesting writer that a lot of people aren't aware of. But again, he writes the type of dark fiction that really can get to you. And another one that was published, I believe, last year or the year before is Northwest Passages by Barbara Roden, who writes very much in the tradition of M.R. James. So there's two authors there that are different ends of the literary types, but still very dark and very readable for this time of year.
Very cool.
And once again, everyone, you can visit Paula's bio if you didn't catch any of those books on our website, adphantom.com. We'll have links to her site, Prime Books, as well. And we encourage you to visit the Prime Books website to check out all new and upcoming releases. Well, I'll tell you, Paula, we are running out of time, but real quick, I want to ask you, do you have any special plans for Halloween that you won't get in trouble sharing with us?
I wish I did. Actually, I will be at World Fantasy Con in San Diego. Okay. This is one time of year that's usually a working holiday for me. So,
it's a good one to be working though. So,
that's actually I will be at that, and that's always a great place to be with a lot of great people. So you can't beat that.
Excellent.
For sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this segment, Paula. Ladies and gentlemen, for more information about Paula Grant, including the books that she recommends, links to her website and links to the sites at Prime Books and a number of other things, visit adphantom.com under our special guests and look for Paula. Stay tuned for just a few moments. After this commercial, we will be back with our special musical guest.
Thanks, Paula.
Thanks.
Ryan, the other day my friend came up to me and said, John, I love the Ed Phantom Show. What more can I do to support you and your process of this wonderful show?
It's so funny that you say that, John, because I have hundreds, literally hundreds of people asking me every day, how can we support the Ed Phantom Show? Well, ladies and gentlemen, to all our adoring fans out there, this is how you can support Ed Phantom. As you know, we're partnered with iTunes, Newegg, Priceline, Groupon, Logitech, GoDaddy, Barnes & Noble, and MusiciansFriend.com.
Wow. That's a lot of sponsors. What does that mean for them?
Okay, well, what it means, one, is that we've been hard at work and that our show and our website looked great and they wanted to partner with us to bring us great products. So what that means for them is you can go to our website, adphantom.com. At the very bottom, you're going to see each one of these company logos. As you click on them, you're going to be taken to a site on Ad Phantom that has specific exclusive deals that are supplied to us by these partners. Even if we don't have exclusive ones at that time, you can still go to that site and visit some of the information from that particular product. When you click on that, you're going to go to their site, and anything that you would already purchase, musicians out there buying new equipment, if you're into books, you can go Barnes & Noble, if you're just simply buying through iTunes, you're going to be taken to the partner's own website. But by purchasing that product and going to us first, you help support Ad Phantom so that we can bring you great content.
That's pretty awesome. So basically all the person has to do is go to our website, click on the great website that they were already planning on buying products from and just buy through the website. And it costs the same amount as they would do it normally, right?
Absolutely. It doesn't cost anything extra. And on top of that, because of Ad Phantom's format, we work on promoting small businesses and large corporations. So by creating that network of people, we help support the little guy. So you're also going to see your local deals and stuff that maybe is somebody who's just advertising their own product. So basically what it means is if you have a band, if you have a large corporation, a small company, maybe just one little product that you're trying to get some more exposure, you can visit us at phantom.com, help support the little guy and the big guy and the musician and the weird guy, and ultimately support Ad Phantom.
That's right. AdPhantom.com. Finding the people behind the ads.
Oh, the night. Oh, still.
The Bronx is an indie rock band based out of Provo, Utah. The band consists of Dane and Grant Brock, who both do the vocals and play guitar, keyboards, and bass, Derek Cheney on guitar, and Matt Woodland on drums. The Bronx formed in January of this year and have been playing shows locally ever since. When asked to describe their style, the Brocks responded with, "We seek to be a refreshing blend of catchy melodies and simple instrumentation for an overall sound that is a nod to the nostalgic, yet simultaneously both modern and fresh. We are named the Brocks after the last name of the two brothers who formed the band, and sing and write our songs, and this really represents the ideals we have as a band. If you look around in music, you see so many people trying so, so hard. We named our band after our last name. It's simple. It's who we are. The idea of letting who we are take over in our music naturally, and not being hindered by trying to look, dress, act, and sound a certain way, or to appear a certain way, is really one of the main driving forces behind the Brocks' music, and provides an unadulterated musical experience for our listeners. That's our brand. Pureness. Nothing contrived, super real, and just really good." Check out more about the Brocks as well as links to their content at adphantom.com. Special thanks to all our guests and all the staff here at AdPhantom. We once again thank you for joining us and hope you enjoyed the show. Are you in a band or have a great show idea? We love feedback, so please visit our website, www.adphantom.com. Leave a comment, become our Facebook fan, follow us on Twitter, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Also, don't forget to look at our daily product deals. We'll now close with one of our favorite tracks from our musical guest.
Gonna break the law. I don't care. Ad Phantom, finding the people behind the ads.